Listener warning, everything about this podcast is offensive and often stupid.
This is Tom and Rob with Guys, Games, and Beer, and we are here this morning with some Mordok from the Last Hope LARPing group.
Rob, wow, never mind. Rob's already going to be killed before he gets going on this.
Hey, guys, how's it going today?
I do not
good time.
Mordok, you are on your own.
What do you think is your favorite part of the show?
Ishtapatula.
That's right, Ishtapatula. Patula. Awesome. So, we're very close to the election. What are your feelings on the election?
I'm a douche not man.
I think we can all agree with that.
I am totally behind his decision on that. I think I'm going to do the exact same thing this election.
I think so too.
All right. So, have you seen anything at the show that you particularly liked?
Shara.
Okay, see? Not my first choice, actually. There's a few things I've seen, but that was not on my list. I will have to check it out and see what I think of it as well. All right?
So, out of all the games that are here, what do you think your favorite game was?
Last Hope Live Action Roleplay.
Last Hope, live action role play.
I have to agree with that.
You know a little bit of English.
That's good.
It doesn't translate well to Mordok. It just doesn't translate to Mordok, buddy. I mean, come on.
I guess you're probably right. That's true.
So Last Hope is out of Baraboo, Wisconsin. It's a LARPing group. We actually got some footage of them yesterday, and hopefully we'll get some more footage from them today. Am I missing something, Rob? Don't kill anything or break anything yet, all right? We're not quite done yet. As soon as we're done, you can kill Rob, though, okay? I'll offer him up.
Not Rob. Larry. He's big and tasty and loud.
I mean, come on, honestly, you can kill him. Nobody's going to miss him at the end of the day. Well, maybe a little bit, but at the end of the day, you never know. All right, so, again, we are here with people from Last Hope LARP. These are the Mordoks. We saw you guys... probably three years ago,
I think. Yeah,
doing combat, and it is amazing to watch your combat. You got any comments on the combat you guys do? Oh, stomping on people's heads. That always works too.
Well, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that is once you've done that, they are pretty well out of the game.
I agree. Right. The head stomp is really probably my favorite. Thanks.
I don't think you're going to win this one, Rob.
Well, I think I'm going to let my fist do the talking.
Please don't hurt me. I'm a bleeder.
All right. So, one more time. If you guys haven't checked out, check out Last Hope LARPing. I think they've got a website, and I don't know it. Off camera, scream the website out.
LastHopeLARP.com.
So that's a pretty easy one.
LastHopeLARP.com. You can't miss finding that website. Check out their website.
And join the Mordoks.
You know, honestly, if you're going to do something, go full bore at it.
Hey there, everybody. This is Travis with Guys, Games, and Beer. I'm here at Gamehole Con 2016, and I'm here with Jonathan of Hexplore It. It was a game I got to demo yesterday and play through. It's a game I'm very intrigued about, so we brought him on the air to kind of learn more about it. So, Jonathan, welcome to Guys, Games, and Beer.
Hey, thank you.
If you wouldn't mind explaining to us what Hexplore It is for our audience.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you. Appreciate being here today. Hexplore It is a team-building, hero-building adventure game. You're basically going to be going on the game board with your heroes, you get to select a role in a race. You have 24 options for each. That gives you a total character combo option of over 500 characters that you can select. This is a fantasy game board, so you're looking at dwarves and elves and humans. You're combating a whole sort of assortment of monsters, bosses. Basically, what you're trying to do is go through the game and get as powerful as you can to beat up the Dead King, who takes on the role of destroying the valley. So he's taking away your cities as you play the game, and the idea is to try and get as powerful as possible to take him out.
Right. So how many players is this game recommended for? And pretty easy. Complexity or easy to pick up? So
yeah, good question. So this game is set up for a 1 to 7 player. You actually have a game difficulty bar that you can modify the game's difficulty as you play it. So in a single player game, you have the ability to play just by yourself against the Dead King, but that ramps up the difficulty quite substantially in a higher group number. So let's say you're playing a 6 player game, you can play very difficult game in a 6 player. When you're playing a 7 player, you actually get to have the 7th player play as the Dead King, and you get to mess with the players as they're playing. So you get to actually try and take out the players and kind of mess with them. From a complexity standpoint, it is actually a little bit of a complex game to learn. It's set up for folks who enjoy role-playing, who have done that before. However, the setup time is about 20 minutes. So if with an easy-to-read rulebook, you're able to get started pretty quickly. And we're going to have videos as well on YouTube to show exactly how to play the game.
One of the things I saw immediately when we were kind of setting up and getting started is, again, this is the heroes, the amount of classes and things, the options you had to choose from the beginning of the game, it floored me. I mean, we played with like a summoner, a nomad, there were a bunch of spellcasters and tinkerer, and like I was just absolutely floored by how many classes and characters that we got to play, and as well as the races you got to choose on top of that. How much of a task was it to actually come up with all those and balance their powers? Because they all looked very unique, and I thought that was very cool. You got to play something that kind of express yourself like you would as playing a D&D character or something.
Yeah.
Well, how was that?
It was actually quite an evolution. I've been working on this game for about 3 years, and it all came about. I was a part of a cartographer's guild. It's basically a map maker's guild. We had a competition 1 month, make a map that would be used in a board game, and I ended up winning the competition. And everybody was like, "This map could be in a board game," and I was like, "This map could be in a board game." So basically, I made all of the roles after the fact based on the map, and we started with 6, and then we just kind of kept adding, and I had all these ideas, and I have some great friends who've helped give us ideas and work on these. Like you said, the amount of replayability is huge, because no two games are going to be the same. Races give you a specific ability that you can use. Rolls give you 2 specific abilities you can use. So that's 72 different abilities that are completely unique in the game, as well as your base attack and defense. And couple that with all of the monsters that you're fighting, and there are quite a few varied possibilities in how your game can turn out.
I played through this, and to explain it to anybody who hasn't played it or seen the game, it's really a great middle ground between if you don't want to start a Dungeons & Dragons or a role-playing campaign, but you still want to get that, you know, RPG experience. It's got a great set of rules. You can sit down, pick it up, you can play for, you know, a good afternoon, and again, the characters and the board and the adventures, the randomized quests, it really is fantastic. Or another alternative scenario is like, you have an afternoon or you have a day, you want to play some role-playing game, but nobody wants to be the DM. If you have somebody who doesn't know the rule or like knows the rules, you can play as well as, you know, kind of help run the game. So again, if you're I've run into many situations like, oh, I would love to start some, you know, start a role-playing campaign, but nobody really wants to step up and do the responsibility of Dungeon Master. Yeah, you can play by yourself. Yeah, you can practice. So again, it's a chance to play that role playing experience with a party and play together cooperatively. But again, the board does some of the upkeep and stuff where you can actually play as enjoy yourself as well as kind of running the game, which I think is spectacular. And again, the amount of classes just it floored me. I don't get really impressed a lot by it. It was like how well everything seemed to play. I was very impressed by it. So you're looking to kickstart this game in the future. You're kind of developing things before. I know you're kind of playing with the modular boards. What's kind of the timeline of the game in the future?
Sounds good. So the idea is I obviously want to make this product the best product for people who are going to be supporting me. And the idea there is I want to make sure that we do things properly, carefully. The Kickstarter is actually planned in March. I've actually spent the last 2 years developing this game in regards to Kickstarter and getting it prepared for that. The idea is to test the modular map, see how well that works. There are some different abilities and things that go along with that modular map, and I know a lot of our supporters really love the idea of the modular map, so for now it's me playtesting as much as possible. We have 350 hours already in of playtest, and right now it's making sure that is the exact best decision for Hexplorit on Kickstarter. Some of the cool things that you can do with the game. You can actually summon the dragon. There's a black market that you can unlock. It gives you a whole access to a number of different special items. You can fight up to 10 very challenging bosses and go to shrines and ruins and complete quests. Quite a few different things.
So since you're working on the game, how would you follow the game to see the progression, or so somebody could find out when Kickstarter starts off?
Yeah, the best way to do that is to go to hexplorit.com. That's HEXPLORIT.com. And you can follow us there. We have a newsletter subscription. We send out an email or two every month about the game and its progress. In fact, I reveal to our subscribers a role every month, and this month is going to be the Berserker, so we'll be making a little story about the Berserker, we will be talking about him. And going forward, you can go there to get caught up on the project.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan, for having being on their show and talking about Hexplorit. Again, guys, this is Travis and Ryan with Guys Games and Beer at GameholeCon 2016. Thank you for tuning in.
Thanks very much. Thank you, guys. Thank
you. And today's interview from Jake's Pumpkin Spice Ale.
Wow, really, Rob? Really? Yeah. Yeah.
I love being an asshole.
That pretty much was.
But for our real topic here at Guys, Games, and Beer at GameholeCon 2016, I'm here with Andy from 66 Games. He's here to talk about a game we tried out called Pumpkins versus Ghosts. It was one that we got to play right away when we got here. It's kind of played a little bit of the alpha. It's a very, the board itself so far is simple, but the mechanics are very cool. And so I wanted to bring him on the air to kind of talk a little bit about Pumpkins versus Ghosts. If you wouldn't mind explaining to us what that game is, please.
Well, it's a dice game where you have five ghost dice and five pumpkin dice, and you're kind of battling out between each other to see whether the graveyard or the garden wins.
So Ryan and I got the chance to sit down and play, and so this is kind of a turn-based game. You play with dice on a board. It's a grid system, so you're kind of moving around your pieces to do battle with one another, as well as protecting your kind of king. The ghosts have their graveyard tombstone, and the pumpkins have their vine patch. So we kind of took turns back and forth, revealing cards from our deck, moving our pieces around, and doing battle with kind of our little pawns here. It was very interesting once we kind of see the mechanics fly. It was like, okay, start a little conservatively, maybe place a trap or two, which we'll kind of get to in a moment. But then after, like, we kind of figured out how the game kind of goes back and forth, we were really flying to try and get each other to blow each other up, basically. Ryan, what were your impressions playing through the game?
I thought it was pretty fun. I mean, we had the dice. We tried to get traps as close as we could to the other player's totem, or they're both totems, right?
Right. Yeah.
And and to try to take them out, or you can take the dice and try to attack those totems to take him out, but we ended up having the trap take out our totem. But we were both stuck in front of a trap for like a few rounds. We did miss one of the mechanics, which would have allowed us to move our totem out of the way. But yeah, explain a little bit about the, you know, that totem, and how you can move it around and stuff.
So you can move your totems around. The ghosts have a totem that is the tombstone, and the pumpkins have the vine. And you're trying to protect that from all the other pawns out there. An interesting mechanic in the game is that since your pawns are actually dice, they show a different value 1 through 6 as the game goes on. And so, you know, a 6 beats a 5, a 5 beats a 4, that kind of thing. And while they're attacking each other and resolving their battle, they can go up or down. So that's kind of neat. We made it so that when a 6 goes up, though, it becomes a 1. And when a 1 goes down, it becomes a 6. So it kind of gives like a little round robin mechanic to it. You see people sacrificing their own pawns to try to lower their, you know, 1 down to a 6 and stuff like that. It's fun, you know?
That was one thing I really found interesting while playing this game. Again, the first few rounds, it's like, okay, I've got these movement cards. You're kind of like trying to position so you're not leaving yourself too defenseless. But we got to that point in the game when we realized, oh, you can either sacrifice your own pieces and bring them back as potentially stronger characters, or, again, bringing things back off the board and then pulling them back to your totem. There's some really interesting strategies you can kind of work out in this game. Once you kind of figure out, like, oh, you've got these cards, you get a burst card, you bring everything back on the field where your opponent doesn't expect it, or you get a double movement character so you can throw one of your sixes at somebody else's 5 and take them out and leave their base unprotected. There were a lot of very interesting cards. There were a few turns, though, is like, so we have, you can either play cards to move your own characters a decent amount, or there are cards you can play of your opposite character's team to move their pieces as well. So you can try to lure them into a trap or lure them into one of your own characters that you can win against. So there's some very interesting interaction back and forth. So with this game, is there like an age range, and how long do you expect a play session to last?
Well, the game is designed to play in about 20 minutes, probably 30 or a little more the first time you play it. Age range, you know, I think it'd be a great game for 8 and above, but, you know, the U.S. says you got special rules if it's for kids 12 or under, so 13 and above officially, I would say.
So this game's right now kind of alpha. Is there expected release, and how are you going to get it out there?
Well, the game just came out of alpha. We've just opened it up to beta testing. We're actually doing some designer pumpkin dice to tie into a premium version of the game. We have that on Kickstarter right now. And during that Kickstarter, we opened it up to allow people to sign up as beta testers. And so we've got people signed up to beta test. We're going to have about 50 people beta testing, giving us their feedback. And then next year around Halloween, we're going to go ahead and put it on Kickstarter for a full, you know, a full production release.
If anybody wants to find more information or updates about this game, where can they go to check you out online?
66studio.com. We're Studio 66.
Okay. I said it out loud. I didn't get that. But now that makes a lot more sense. All right. Well, thank you, Andy, so much for being on the air. It's a pleasure to have you, and we're really looking forward to checking out the game.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Hey, I'm Hungover Rob, and I'm with...
Joe Dickinson.
And you're with...
Joe Dickinson.
Multiple personality disorder.
That's right.
It's a serious problem.
Wherever he goes.
What game are we talking about today?
We're talking about a game called Negative Nancy, Positive Pete.
I love this name.
I love this game. So we got to try this game out a little bit this morning. Oh my God, this has got some real potential.
Before we do this, let's talk about what the game's about.
Okay.
I want to get into this too. Come on.
Okay. So this is it's a party game. It's a game of opposites, where one person's the judge, they flip a card, and it's going to have either a frowny face or a smiley face. So you're basically, if it has a smiley face, you're saying something good about something bad. So, like, I have best thing about Satan. If you have a frowny face, you're saying something bad about something good. Right? So I think somebody has a frowny face.
I have a frowny face.
He's got a frowny face.
And again, it was tough to come up with something bad for my frowny face. I'm not going to do it yet.
He's holding on.
I'm holding my load on this one.
So... everybody thinks of something good or something bad. They write it down, put it in the middle, judge shuffles it, and passes them all around. So you might be reading your own, might be reading somebody else's. You read their responses, you laugh, have a good time. Judge picks his or her favorite, and then that person gets a point. We play first to three usually.
Right. So there's five of us playing the game. The judge puts out the card. We all have our little pad of paper in front of us. We write down something. Judge shuffles them up, passes them back out.
Exactly.
So you don't get your own response to it. So half the fun is, half the fun is having somebody else read really wrong response to something.
Particularly if it's your mom or your grandma.
Oh, yeah. Because you know they're not going to come up with anything over the top. But you, on the other hand, may take it to the next level.
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
It can get pretty harsh pretty quick.
Right. So then the judge, whoever comes up with the best response, judge picks it.
Exactly.
And then they get to keep the card.
Yep.
And when they get the three of the cards in their hand, they win.
Then and you usually start again.
Yeah. So play time on a game like this is?
It's maybe 30 minutes to an hour.
Right.
Depending on how many people. We've played it with as many as 15 people.
Drunk.
If you're drunk, it can take 240 minutes to 370 minutes.
That's just for Larry to write one thing down at that point. Larry will take longer than that just to write the answer. Oh, no.
It's a shockingly difficult game while drunk. I will say that. It's surprisingly difficult.
But the responses are great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna kind of run through an example round of this game. So we've all been... Okay, so... I'm going to have you read what my card is.
Okay, you got it.
And then me and Rob will have to come up with our response to it. Now, we're going to just say our response out loud because we love these responses. So.
Okay. So we got the worst thing about oral sex.
Okay. So I'm going to go with teeth for that one.
I see.
I'll go for the low-hanging fruit on these things.
When I have to swallow.
Okay. You beat me on that one. You beat me on that one.
I got to say, if I had to choose, Ultimately, I would go and give.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking he would get that. So that's an example of how the game would be played. We would write these things down. All right.
I didn't even pre-think that. That's the worst part of that.
Okay, so which one do you have, Rob?
Painful to hear both of these.
Would you like to read that card?
Okay, so this is the best thing about teenage pregnancy.
Okay.
I'll do mine.
Go ahead and do it.
Getting them pregnant.
Okay, I'm going to say larger breasts.
Nice.
I'm going to say, now you and your sister have a new sibling.
You get the count. Wait, Larry's got one.
An empty nester at 30.
Oh. You know that hits close to home.
Wow. All right. Wow.
No more copies of the game.
So, but those are examples of how the game would play. I can see where that, again, in a slightly inebriated crowd like ourselves, could get way off the rails really
that is
quick.
Extremely true.
Yes. Sorry, Larry just killed me with that.
That's why in the deck there's some adult cards, and then there's some cards that are non-adult to make everybody come back down off the ledge a little bit.
Okay, so I did, when I opened the package, I noticed you have two separate bags. So I assume you're putting the more adult cards in that separate bag?
In this particular version, no. It's all hands on deck. All the cards are in one. So
but you could go through and edit the deck.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're playing with, for example, we played with my 13-year-old nephew. We took the oral sex card out of the deck for that one. That was a choice. We could have left it in.
You could have.
Could have left it in.
Especially if he says... When pastor makes me swallow. See, that would be...
God!
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, he went there. That wasn't even in a round. And he went there.
He went for the bonus points on that one.
That's true.
Wow.
We'll find out a lot about my nephew.
I am so sorry.
I think you found out a lot about Rob.
That's also true. Probably
more than we wanted to know about Rob.
That's also true.
Okay, so, do you have... So this game is completely launched now. You're actually marketing this game.
It's all self-published. I do it right now. Designed it, and it's self-published through the Game Crafter, right out of Madison here.
Yeah.
So we're working towards a Kickstarter. We don't have an estimated date yet. I imagine it'll be in 2017 sometime.
As always, when they get a Kickstarter, we will have a link to the Kickstarter on our sites so you guys can find it. But I want to talk a little bit more. You talked about it. You're using the Game Crafter out of here in Madison. Now, we're all local from Wisconsin, but a lot of people don't know what that's about. So
Cool.
Give a little rundown on that.
Yeah, well, for me as a self-published designer, I mean, it was the perfect site. I was looking for a place where I could a website that was easy to understand, and the Game Crafter was that. It was the interface is very easy to understand, especially if you're not doing a print run of 1,000 games. You know, I have 10 copies of the game here at GameHoleCon. So it's a little, you know, it's pricier because it's a small run, but it also enables you to take an idea and make it a reality. And there wasn't a lot of companies that I could find. They exist. It's not that they don't exist. This is one that, where they were just like, hey, welcome. Like, you can do this, and you can make it good.
And that's something cool about GameCrafter. Now, GameCrafter does events as well, but they, again, the nice thing about them is small runs, too. Like you mentioned, you were able to do a run of 10. You go to any of those big companies, you go with a run of 10, they're going to go, no.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, is in addition to this game, I had ideas for other prototypes. I could take them and make them a reality and just get one copy and play test it to see how it goes. And usually it doesn't go well. So I have to figure out what I need to change in the next prototype. But it allows me to do that in a way that feels better than just index cards. And, it, you know.
And again, so, Rob, go ahead. You can see that the copy is really quite good. I mean, they did a really nice job. So this, again, this is a 1 of 10 prototype. Not prototype, production run.
Basically.
And for a small production run, the quality of the build is really good.
Yeah. It's a prototype with the hope of, you know, like we sell it, but it's really, you know, we're also, a lot of times we'll give it to people. It's a way to possibly attract publishers, question mark, because I have no idea how to actually go about doing that. But it's also a way to, I don't know, it's a way to attract attention so that if we did it through a Kickstarter or something like that, it's a way that we can make people aware of, hey, this product exists.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun.
Kickstarter really wants you to have something like that before you kickstart. If you just come out with an idea, they're going to look at you and go, oh, that's nice, and no. Kickstarter, like you said, you have to have something like
exactly.
this. So being able to use GameCrafter to do that first, and like you said, with their web interface, which allows you to do all the design work online without having to go into the office or anything like that, is really good.
It's definitely worth something.
Yeah. And so for you people who don't know what it is, do you remember? I don't know their website off the top of my head.
For the GameCrafter's website is, just, I believe, just thegamecrafter.com.
Right.
And then we have a website that's not on the box, which is negativenancypositivepete.com as well.
So, GameCrafter, again, if you're interested in publishing games, great place to do it. They did it. You can see how cool their results are. And then, again, theirs is negativenancypositivepete.com. You can buy copies
of
the game there.
As of right now, via the GameCrafter website.
Okay, so you go to negativenancypositivepete.com and you can buy this. And the list price on this game is?
We have it on the GameCrafter. I want to say it's $24.99.
All right, $24.99. So for a card game, that is a brilliant price.
Yeah, and let us know when you're doing your Kickstart. It's kind of a no-brainer Kickstart, honestly. Looking at it, we look at a lot of Kickstarts. Kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. I don't think you're going to have a hard time getting funding.
The trickiest part is finding the people to fund it. You know, you have family and friends, but beyond that, I don't know exactly how you go about discovering people. Obviously, via podcasts such as this is one great avenue for it, so thank you for having me on.
We have 12 hardcore listeners, and they're going to totally
get
it.
You've got 12 more people who
my
know about
12
your game
family
now.
And friends,
exactly.
Your 12 listeners.
We're up to 24.
Man.
We're good.
And Belize.
We're going to get
10,000
easy.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Thank you very much for coming on. Really do appreciate you coming. And more interviews coming up, guys. And website one more time before we leave because I talked after the vlog.
Oh, sure. It's negativenancypositivepete.com. And hopefully we'll have one for an actual game company that's just not called Joe Dickinson.
Joe Dickinson, really.
Yeah.
Just fine for a game company.
And we'll link that below, too.
We will have links to all this on our website. Actually, I think we should put a link up to GameCrafter because now that he's bought it up in the interview.
Throw it right in there.
You bet it. All right.
Cool.
Later.
Hello, this is Ryan and Larry with Guys Games and Beer, and we're here with
Susan Price
and Ian Price of Diamond Dust Dreams. And they're here to show us two of their games that they have. They are
Bad Decisions
and Kitsune of Foxes and Fools. So earlier, Larry and I were playing Bad Decisions, and we'd just like to get a quick overview of what this game is all about.
Sure. Bad Decisions is a party game. It involves playing basically a similar game to Apples to Apples or Cards Against Humanity, where you're matching cards against a prompt card, but in our case, the prompt card is a story card. So it gives a Mad Lib sort of twist to it, where you have a fool, a crisis, and a bad decision on the story card. In your hand, you have five each fool cards, crisis cards, and bad decision cards. So depending on what story is played, you are setting up two of the types. In the case of the back of the box, you're setting up a fool and a crisis, and everyone else is playing a bad decision. Then the storyteller who has played the first two cards picks which end card they like best.
One of the interesting dynamics that I found in the game is that you're not always selecting the same thing. So when we just displayed one of the cards, one of the things you would notice is that the stripes are in a different order. And the order of the stripes is basically the order that the cards are played in. And so it will vary. So when it's your turn, you may be playing two cards, like a crisis and a bad decision. The next time your turn comes around, it might be a fool and a bad decision. So, you know, it kind of varies that way, which I thought was an interesting dynamic.
When designing this game, we decided on giving that interactivity and that variety. Since we had three types of cards, we needed to make sure that you used all of them pretty much equally, because otherwise you'd end up running out of one deck really fast and not the others. And to give that interactivity, we wanted to have people do fun things on their turn even when they're judging, so you got to choose the setup, which also gives you a lot more different setups. It's an exponential growth because you have 200 of each of the three types of cards and you're always using all three types.
So to put numbers on that, with 660 cards, we have 480 million possible combinations, which is a lot of replay. And in another month, we're going to be starting a Kickstarter with at least three different mini expansions of 33 more cards.
Not to toot our own horn too much, but compared to other games of the genre, it's a couple orders of magnitude more combinations before you start to see the same thing.
So you got a Kickstart coming up, and when is that scheduled for? You said about a month, so what, December?
Early December.
Yeah.
All right. And so just to kind of dive a little bit deeper into the game a little bit, one of the things that I also noticed about it is, now I understood the crisis, because everyone understands what a crisis is. Something really bad happened. All right, I got to deal with it. And then you have a bad decision. Most of us done those. Here at Guys, Games, and Beer, where we drink a lot. Yeah, we've probably done a few of them. And so, you know, we understand those. But fool, I didn't really initially understand that.
So we were inspired to make this game when I was talking with Dad, who is a news junkie, and he and I were noticing that there were these same stupid people and stupid situations showing up in the news over and over. And Mom heard us complaining about stupid people, stupid situations, and stupid decisions, and thought, fool plus crisis equals bad decision. There has got to be a game in that. And we looked it up in the Patent Trademark Office database and on Google. Could not believe that nobody had taken the game name Bad Decisions yet. So we went and took that right away because we knew it was a hot one. Everybody loves our banner when we're at Gen Con or any other convention. They look at it and they say, Bad Decisions, I've made those. So the reason that fools are in the game is because you've always got these stupid people. And Mom, why don't you tell about the way that we made the fool cards?
Okay, we wanted to do two things with the fools. The first is we didn't want to use specific names because we didn't want it to age out real fast. And if you say Barack Obama or, when we made the game, Stephen Harper was Prime Minister of Canada. He's not anymore. Obama shortly will not be president anymore. But if you say the U.S. president, Canadian Prime Minister, the German chancellor, there's always going to be a prime minister. There's always going to be a chancellor. We also went for archetypes, so we have judges and cops and doctors and teenagers. We've got a teen with too much attitude. We do name some names on groups since the second half of the game that our Kickstarter supporters voted on. They wanted bad decisions in technology. So Google and Yahoo and Microsoft and Apple do show up, but not individual people, just the companies.
You know, just listening to you, it makes me think, where are you guys out of?
So we are from one of the fools in our box, actually, the city of Chicago. Actually, the suburbs, but close enough. And the third member of our team who isn't present for this convention is my brother, who is living in Mora, Minnesota, which is just north of Minneapolis-St. Paul.
You know, it's funny because, you know, because you bring up the Canadian prime minister, I'm like, wait, are you guys from Canada? You know...
We actually have a lot of family on my dad's side who live in Maritime Canada, but mostly we actually tried very hard to not make this a U.S.-specific game. We actually looked for world news and worldwide relevant things because there's people who speak English who might find the game funny in other countries, so why not sell it to them too?
Well, that would make sense to me. Ryan?
So you mentioned you had the third member, the brother. Can you explain what your brother does in the process?
Certainly. Charlie is our art director. He did the basic graphic design for both Kitsune and Bad Decisions. He also did 95%, I would say, of the actual illustrations on Kitsune, and as art director found the artists to do the other few cards when we were running short on time and needed to get it to the printer. He's pretty good. We like him.
We sent him to art school, so we figured we'd give him a job, too.
So since he's done the artwork on both games, can you start talking about the other game, Kitsune? Let us know what that's about.
Sure. So in Kitsune, you play as a fox spirit character. And you have, starting usually two tails, and you're trying to earn nine tails. This is based on Japanese, Chinese, and Korean mythology, where nine-tailed foxes are a special mythological thing. Now, based on the Japanese mythology, the way that you earn your tails is you scheme against these foolish people, and you're trying to teach them a lesson, because you can thus purify them of their sinfulness by tricking them into learning a lesson because you are a divine spirit fox. And this impresses your elders and the god Inari whom you serve, so you get to earn your tails. And the game basically plays out in a humorous, strategic way, similar to Munchkin, but with a little bit more strategic depth, or Ninja Burger, or Space Pirate Amazon Ninja Cat Girls, or a couple of other games I took inspiration from. And this was the first game that we made. I did most of the design work. Mom edited the rule book. And my brother, as we said, did most of the illustration himself.
So, you know, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily jump out to be inspired by Asian mythology. Mm-hmm. So, for an American, so what inspired you that way?
So, I came up with the idea for Kitsune at first because the characters that were in the game were something that I had been playing in a role-playing game context. They were populating a sort of homebrew Japanese mythology-inspired setting. And the first time that I set them down in a card format, I was actually, at the time, playing the Legend of the Five Rings card game. And so I was messing around with, what if I made custom cards for this game? After I'd come up with a whole bunch of custom cards and mechanics, I realized nobody's going to want to play this custom crap that I've made for myself with me. Even my friends aren't really going to want to play with my custom cards. So I stripped out all of the Legend of the Five Rings mechanics, made up my own full game mechanics to support the characters and the theme I was going for, and started playtesting it.
So we were playing Bad Decisions earlier, and it's a pretty quick game, but could you give us a little rundown on number of players and how long it would take to get through a game of Kitsune?
Certainly. Bad Decisions, as you say, it's a party game, so you can play it for 5 minutes. You can play it for 5 hours if you want, but you don't have to. It's three or more players, as many as you want. Kitsune, on the other hand, is 3 to 8 players. You run out of resources if you try to do more than 8. And somewhere between a half an hour and an hour, everybody will be almost winning, but it can take another half hour to an hour before someone actually wins, because they can use resources to stop other people from winning.
So both of these are obviously full production and available. So where are they available?
Well, if you're local to Madison, which is the area that we are filming this in at Gamehole Con, then Pegasus Games carries us. And I think there's a couple other game stores in the area that you can go to. Basically, any local game store, if you show up and ask them for the game, they'll be able to get it from their distributor, even if they don't have it in stock. I'm pretty sure that Noble Knight Games in Janesville knows about us. The Source in Minneapolis. Near us, there's the Gaming Goat chain in the Chicago area and the Gamers World chain. Also, a couple of other game stores that we know that carry us. Down in Indianapolis, there's Saltier Games. But like I said, basically any game store, because we're in distribution through ACD and Alliance and all them. We go through a group called Studio 2 Publishing, who market us to the distributors. They do a lot of independent publishers like us and allow distributors to order a bunch of different games from them, where from any of the independent publishers who have less than 10 games to their name, they really wouldn't be able to get into distribution by themselves.
So, do you have a website?
Yes, for Kitsune, we have kitsunecg.com. And for Bad Decisions, we have baddecisionscg.com, with the CG short for card game. And on the Bad Decisions website, you can actually try out the game for free. We've got a sort of semi-stable alpha version of the online play of the game, and we're working on developing that into a full app.
Ryan, anything else?
So from the website, we'll then have information about the Kickstarter for the Bad Decision expansion?
That will be on the Bad Decisions website. It will also be on our Bad Decisions Facebook page. We have a Facebook page for each of the games as well as our website.
All right, well, thanks for joining us on Guys, Games, and Beer. And these are a couple great games, and I hope people check them out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom and Larry with Guys, Games, and Beer, and we are here with?
Don.
And Don, you are with?
Myself, okay. Independent publisher.
Being with or, myself is just fine here. You're an independent
publisher.
Come up
with a super creative name for your company?
Are you thinking about a super creative name for your company?
Don Scurlock Games. That's
right. Okay, that works. Yeah, just that is a super creative name for a company, and perfectly fitting for your company.
Yes.
So you have a new game out, and the game is called
Hero Maniacs.
All right. So Hero Maniacs. We got a chance to play this. It's actually a very interesting little game. Now, that being said, even though we've had a chance to play it, I think one of the first things that I really kind of caught my eye on Hero Maniacs is the artwork. And I'm going to talk about that in just a few moments, but go ahead and give us the quick rundown. What is Hero Maniacs?
It's a lighthearted dungeon crawler fantasy-themed game. You start at level 1 of the dungeon, try to work your way up. To get through each of the levels, you need experience. To get experience, you attack the monsters. Of course, to attack the monsters, you need heroes. So you can recruit heroes, use them, pair them up, kind of chain them together to form parties to attack the monsters. Then when you defeat the monster, its level becomes experience, and then you can cash that experience in to level up. And if you get to level 5, first one to get to level 5 and out is the winner.
Right. So you're going through 5 layers of a dungeon, or 5 levels of a dungeon, my apologies. You're going through 5 levels of a dungeon and getting the required experience to level up to the next level of that dungeon.
Right, yes. And when you're in one level, you need a certain amount to escape that particular level, and then you can go up, and then you need experience on that level to escape and continue forward.
So this is, it's kind of a card game. I mean, I'm not going to go completely card game, but it's kind of a card game. So, yeah, primarily a card game. So you're not playing against the board or anything like that. You are playing against other players. Again, we got a chance to play test this game a little bit. So you are actually playing against other players. There's a few screw the other player elements in it, but generally you're trying just to get yourself out of the dungeon.
Well, and because some elements are playing open-handed, you can still look and say, oh, that person may need that card. Maybe I'll just take it now so that he can't have that card.
Like,
you know,
when you
so
wiped that, off that row with that six, which meant I would have hit 25 exactly. yeah, that may have been one where you kind of saw what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know.
There are interact effects some heroes have, you know, which certainly can be used against somebody else, but certainly elements like you just described, you know, taking something or defeating a monster somebody else might need, you know, still has that take that, you know, effect. So
it's actually way more to pay attention to than you think. I mean, it's you know, it's you know, obviously still probably in the casual category, but probably on the high end of paying attention casual, because, you know, you got to pay attention to, you know, what are the other players doing? How close are they? You got to pay attention to when you draft various heroes, like how do they already fit in with your other heroes? And so there's kind of a lot of nuances to pay attention to.
Yeah, pretty much every hero card you have has some effect or some discard effect that you're going to go through or a play effect. So you really do have to kind of pay attention to your hand as far as that's going.
Was that always in the game or did that build over time?
It was always in the game. Like I said, you got to chain them together and kind of think about what you're doing, and I think it offers creative ways to chain them together and how can I do this, and like you said, with what I have, or if I need this guy, you know, should I take it, you know, then. Another thing you do have to pay attention to is the math. You know, there's some math, and as the box says, bad math equals bloodbath. So if you add incorrectly or underestimate, you could.
Yeah, you're gonna end up losing some of your characters. Now, here is the problem this morning. Okay, so it was a really late night last night. So we're recording Sunday morning. Hence the reason we're drinking. It was a really late night last night, and I honestly, you started going through the rules, and I know they're not. They're, like you said, you got to do a little more paying attention with this. And my mind is really numb this morning. But once we got going on it, Well, I'm not past my numbness. I'm just renumbing. Once we got going, the flow was really good in the game. I like the flow of the game. So the play time on the game is
Roughly 30 to 60 minutes. You know, once you kind of get in and kind of just play without stopping or, you know, asking and that sort of thing. So about 30, 60 minutes. Like you said, the turns are very short. Recruiting, just taking one card or maybe two cards. Attacking, you know, is very short. Leveling up is super short. So,
Where is this in the development? Is it widely available? Is it available at all? Are you kickstarting?
Was available on
GameCrafter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think on the last take he did.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Currently available on GameCrafter.
This is take two, by the way.
Sorry about that.
Okay, I did kind of forget. Yeah, bad cameraman. Okay, so yeah, I did kind of forget that this is take two now. It's been a long morning.
Okay, so back to the availability.
Yes. Currently on GameCrafter. The core set, base set, comes with the red, green, and blue characters. There is also a expansion set that comes with the black, white, and gold characters. Just adds another layer to it. Like the white characters are more like ice related, kind of freeze out the other guy, prevent him from doing things. The black characters are more of the rogue, thief, you know, those sort of characters that you can steal cards and kind of more of take that. Sort of thing. And then
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the yellow characters have some heroes that can raid somebody else's monsters and taken for themselves. You know, after all your hard work, I can just swoop in
and
take it.
Which happened a couple times in this game. It happened to you mainly during this game. But.
So I didn't realize, we were playing with the expansions in ours, which I didn't realize that was, I thought that was part of the base game. So now on the side of the box, it says 2 to 5. So that's 2 to 5 with the base. But if you do the expansion, can you do more players?
Well, currently I've just tried it with 5. You could, there are 6 pawns, 6 different colors, so you could, you know, use up to a 6, but like I said, I haven't, the most I've played with is 5.
Yeah, I don't, you know, with our play this morning, I don't see any reason, Larry, why you couldn't go higher on it. I don't see anything in the rules that really stops, I mean, for what we did so far, I didn't find anything that would have made it different. I mean, because, again, it's basically you draft from the 4, and replenish right away, so it's not like that's going down. Same with the monsters. Somebody takes out one of the 4 monsters, you replenish right away.
But like I said, what I'm thinking is, okay, if you have, what's the base deck?
144 cards, 126 so heroes. And
you
monsters.
Could theoretically start running out of cards if you have too many people.
If
you put the additional in, now you got a stack of another
126 cards.
Another 126. So now you've doubled it almost, you know, so.
Well, after Guys, Games, and Beer gets our copy of this, we'll have to order one and try the expansion and try it with a larger party and see how many we can jam into it.
Which is probably
And we'll get back to you once we find out how many we can actually play with.
I'm guessing the playtime is probably going to go up.
So you're working with our buddies Gamecrafter on this. Yes. So again, for those of you who don't know what Gamecrafter is a an independent group that helps indie developers bring their games to fruition. It's at Gamecrafter.com. We really love these guys because they really help out the indie gaming market. So show them lots of love. Buy products from them. The cool thing is, they give you some feedback as far as your initial design and so on.
Yeah, there is a place for players, people who, you know, buy it to write reviews and that sort of thing.
Right, so you get that kind of feedback from them. They give you a place to market your product, which is great.
Yeah.
And they'll put you in touch with manufacturing and so on as well, so, and take care of all that, correct?
To some extent, but I think it's, like, mainly there, you know, on their website,
right.
And people can come there and then look at it, you know, see what you have, so.
A place to actually see what you're up to and buy it if you'd like.
Yes.
So, all right, so,
You definitely want to talk about the art, so.
Yeah, I do, because I haven't gotten to that yet, but I wanted to make sure we talked about the game a little bit. So, I'm not going to lie, I saw this last night, and I really had no idea what the game was yet, and saw the artwork, and I was like, wow, that's really cool art. It just, it kind of hit me with this retro 8-bit feel. Well, no, I didn't go like Boss Monster. I just had an 8-bit feel. I don't know, because of the, you know, fairly primary colors in it. You know, the a lot of blockiness in places. Yeah, there's some rounds in it which you didn't have in 8-bit, I know. But it just had that kind of 8-bit feel to me, and that really appealed to me. So I'm going to ask you about the artwork. First of all, who did your artwork?
I did it myself. I did it on Microsoft Word. They're just shapes, different shapes, put together with different colors, different variants, different shades.
I'm going to tell you right now, there are graphics. I literally heard the combined sigh of 1,000 graphic artists when you said with Microsoft Word, cry out and then suddenly be silenced.
Yes.
So just going to put it out there.
Shapes, colors, patterns, different. You know, you move something around, you could potentially have a brand new character.
It's amazing how that turned out.
And because we are older,
we are.
Of course, this reminds us of when we were doing ASCII art for BBSs.
Yeah, so no, we're really old. We used to actually run bulletin board systems.
Stars and pounds.
All your art had to be done in ASCII in the early days. So, yeah, that's kind of cool, just using the built-in shapes and coming up with some really cool designs, actually, for your characters.
Thank you.
I got into the art, too. I thought that was a really neat element, you know.
It's just very catchy art. You know, it's very different than pretty much anything I've seen. And there's a reason for it. I don't think anybody else would have used Microsoft Word to do their artwork. Bravo on that.
Didn't know there was that many shapes available.
Exactly. Who knew there were that many shapes in Microsoft Word?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So one more time, if people want to find this, where would they find it at?
GameCrafter.com. Just go to the Hero Maniacs page and type in for the search. Look for this page. And then at the bottom, it should say other games you may like and then the expansion pack icon.
We'll
mm-hmm.
All right, what's it going for on there?
I'm sorry?
What's it going for? What's
$25.99 for this one.
Nice.
It comes with the box, rules, like I said, 144 cards. The expansion pack just has the cards, so 126 cards, but all of those cards will fit in this box.
Oh.
So,
all right, now that I'm going to ask, is that a conscious decision? Did you leave this room in the box mm-hmm. to start with so people can put their expansion packs in it?
Sure. Yeah, okay. I will go with that.
Perfectly conscious.
Yes,
I did that intentionally.
Of course I did. Yes.
Okay, good. And what's the expansion going for?
$14.99, I believe it is. So.
So now this is this your only game out on the market? Your first game on the market?
Only game currently.
Okay.
So working on another project coming out.
That sounds like you have something more coming up. So keep your eye on for something else coming out.
Yes. Well, not quite to this stage, but early prototype stage.
All right. All right. All right. So. One more time, this has been Tom and Larry with Guys Games and Beer, and we're here with
Don.
And Don has got this great game. Go find it on GameCrafter.com, and we will see you in the next interview section.
Hi, this is Mel with Guys Games and Beer with the Ladies Auxiliary version, otherwise known as Get Your Own Damn Beer. I am here with Jess and Laura and Erica, who is here to talk about her game, Marrying Mr. Darcy.
Welcome. Thanks. It's good to be here.
You're back again for a second time.
Yes, I'm back here at Gamehole Con for the second year in a row, and I'm demonstrating the game in demo row this year, and it's been really great. I've got to play a lot of great games. So
you have the zombie expansion. Do you have anything new to talk about?
So just this February, we released our new Emma expansion, which is the base game is based on Pride and Prejudice, but Emma is based on the book Emma by Jane Austen. And so it has a new set of heroines, a new set of suitors, and all new events that are from that story. So, yeah.
Awesome. So if you guys don't recognize me, it's because I'm never on here, because I'm not a big board game, video game person. I'm marrying into it. But I really enjoyed your game, and I enjoyed it because I am a big Jane Austen fan. And so I love seeing like the characters kind of come to life on the cards, and it was fun to think about, you know, what if this character ended up with this one? Like, that's a weird idea. What would that look like, and how funny or weird it might be? And I really enjoyed that element. So I think I'd asked you earlier this, but what was kind of your inspiration for the first one, and what led you to Emma as opposed to any of the other Jane Austen books?
Well, my inspiration for this was there was a web series called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries that was on maybe like three or four years now. Oh my God. So that came on and I thought, oh, how cool is this that they have adapted this book that I really love into this web series, and they modernized it, and it was so clever. And I was like, wanted to do something clever too, but that had already been done. So I thought I would try to make a game out of it. And so far it's been really fun and successful. So yeah, and I'm just a big fan of the book. So I just tried to make a game that I wanted to play. And I guess other people like it too. So that was a bonus. So
what led you to pick Emma for your expansion?
So Emma as an expansion, I was looking at how many people were in the story, because my game requires there to be quite a few characters. And so that was like kind of the next easiest one to sort of do. All of Jane Austen's books are all about who gets married to who. So the mechanic totally works for all the books. It's basically about the single ladies trying to catch a guy. That's what it is. And so, you know, the mechanics work pretty well for all of her novels. So I thought Emma had the right number of characters, so that would be the next easiest one to do. So, yeah.
So does that mean there's going to be a next expansion based on a different book?
Yeah. So I think I'm leaning towards Sense and Sensibility. I did take a new job recently in like my real life, not my game designer life, which just feels like not a real thing. So, yeah, so I did take another job recently. And so things have kind of gotten sidetracked in the gaming world. But I am hoping to do at least one more expansion. And Sense and Sensibility or Northanger Abbey. I'm not sure which one. We'll see. I haven't decided.
Certainly Sense and Sensibility is probably more well-known. Yes. So there'd be some better crossover there. But I agree with you. I think it's just such a fun game. And when I first played it, I played with four other guys. And when we did the interview, I'll never forget Tom saying, God, I really felt so kind of used and cheap. And I'm like, that's the point, you know, like for you to feel that way. So I think it's amazing that the game can make a guy understand what a woman did have to go through. Right. And at times still does. Yeah. So,
also, yeah. It's good we don't have to live like that anymore. So,
of course, it's alone.
So, kind of the history. When did you first come up with this game? Like, how many years ago? And then how many years did it take you to make it? And then when did it come out?
Yep. So, it's hard to remember. I think it was about 4 years ago I had the initial idea, approximately. And then from start to finish, from like going to the office supply store and buying cards to like just write stuff on and buying a notebook to having a finished product from the printer, that was a full 2 years that it took to do that. And we did tons of play testing. There were redesigns. The game totally changed. The artist is Eric Evanson, and he is my husband, so I definitely had an advantage of being married to a professional artist. Yes, yep, and so I definitely had a lot of help from him, and a lot of the game's success I have to attribute to how beautiful his artwork looks, so, yeah.
It is nice.
Yeah, thanks.
So, a bit more history?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to point out one of the things that I really loved about the book, but the game was just how beautiful it was. And your husband, I think, did a phenomenal job really kind of bringing them to life. And I know you mentioned he kind of used one of the movies as inspiration. Out of curiosity, which movie did he pick?
Sure. Well, as you might imagine, I've maybe watched all of the adaptations and all of the movies, and I maybe have watched them a lot. So he, a lot of the characters are kind of inspired artistically by the 1995 BBC miniseries, but there's a couple in there from actually the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Georgiana looks a little bit like Georgiana from that web series, and Caroline Bingley is kind of inspired from the 2005 movie that starred Keira Knightley. And so the actress who played Caroline Bingley is kind of a blonde, long hair, kind of mean looking. And so he used her. So he used different, you know, kind of inspiration from different adaptations. But it was definitely kind of a leaping off point for him to figure out the faces and stuff. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm a total nerd. So one of the things I also thought was really interesting as we played was you plucked moments from the book. So the moment where someone's gossiping about someone else, or the moment where someone has a scandal, you know, and it was interesting to kind of see those moments happen to other characters and what the repercussions were, I guess. And so I found that really interesting. Was that kind of fun to like pluck those out as you read, I'm guessing?
Yeah. So the event deck, which sort of goes through the events of the book, yeah, I kind of picked like my favorite moments in the book, or like the most memorable ones, and then the challenge was to figure out a mechanic. So it didn't just happen to one person, but was just a generic thing that could happen to everybody. Exactly. And so if you're mean to somebody, then there's a consequence, and maybe you have to lose your friendliness, or you take something away from somebody else. So trying to figure out the game mechanic of what that event in the book represented in sort of a generic way was really fun. So, yeah.
Well, we all enjoy playing it, and I need to come and play the new expansion now, the Emma expansion.
The zombie one, right?
Yes, the zombie one is really fun to do, too. It just adds that next level of fun to the game, absolutely. Do either of you have any further questions or comments?
I could probably go on forever, so like, I don't know.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right.
Just that it's a really awesome game and you should all go out and buy it because it's really awesome. And she's done a really good job.
All right, thanks.
To that end, please tell us again your website and your name.
Okay. So my name is Erica Svano, and you can find Marrying Mr. Darcy at several online outlets like Amazon, and you can also find more information at marryingmrdarcy.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all the social media as well. So, great.
Thank you so much for being with us again. We really appreciate it. Thank you from Guys, Games, and Beer.